When a band graduates and starts to make music their full-time occupation, an innate feeling kicks in, and you start to look at bands from a different perspective, a softer POV. You start to understand how much is involved in making a go of it, especially in this day and age. And regardless of genre of music, a respect is built, and automatically mutual upon contact with other like parties. I feel this kinship when I meet bands out on the road. Often is the case, the older the band, the nicer the players, because they know, more than anyone, how hard it was to get your foot in the door and stay there. When it comes to hometown bands I meet on the road, the bond is even stronger. It's filled with camaraderie and pride. But it's not without its initial suspicions and vetting. I felt, on many occasions, somewhat of a knee-jerk irreverence aimed in my general vicinity by a few Toronto bands over the years. For the most part, I've learned to shrug it off. I'm aware it's a mixture of jealousy, stupidity, and insecurity, but it's made me very standoffish and cautious when meeting new bands from Toronto. And so, Scott Middleton, guitarist of the Cancer Bats, was on the receiving end of my initial curt nod and raised eyebrow when I first met him, even though he was nothing but gracious to me. It was only when JC told me that he had met up with the Cancer Bats guys and that they were very nice did I unclench my asshole and get off my high horse. Since then, of course, Scott's been on the podcast, episode number 61 to be exact, and here he returns. Truth be told, all the dudes in the Cancer Bats are very affable, very easygoing, and nothing like the brash, ugly, heavy music they've perfected. And despite this kinship, this rapport, it still gets tested. It happened when it was announced that the Cancer Bats were going on tour with Danzig in North America earlier this year. Firstly, I was genuinely happy for them, but I have to admit, I did feel a pang of jealousy upon the tour's announcement. Danzig is on my wish list to tour with, and I would be a kid in a candy store if it ever happened. But if it had to be any other band to do it, I'm happy it was the Cancer Bats. I followed the tour through Scott's Twitter and Instagram, and the two of us chatted online while it was happening, and inevitably I had to ask him onto the podcast to talk about it. Since his last appearance, our worlds have become closer. We're both in the middle of touring our latest albums, Cancer Bats' Searching for Zero album produced by Ross Robinson, and Like Our Fire music album out on New Damage Records in Canada. So, Scott and I are now label mates. Going from this band that rehearsed a few doors down from us years and years ago, to going on tour with Danzig, sometimes I have to shake my head. It's really quite unbelievable what they've managed to accomplish. I'm happy Scott was able to come onto the podcast and share his experience, and I have a feeling he'll be returning yet again. I want to give a shout-out to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones who support this podcast, and to Chino Locos Restaurants for making fish burritos stuffed with chow mein noodles. This podcast isn't sponsored by anyone. Sponsored, quote-unquote. These are just brands I use to make the podcast, to put the podcast together. And I love Chino Locos. Simple as that. I could easily say this podcast is supported by Three's Company reruns because I watch those incessantly. But the list is just going to get longer and longer. Please leave a rating or a review on iTunes, if you can. It helps the podcast's profile. But the fact you're listening right now is more than I can ask for, really. So, okay. Scott Middleton's second appearance on the official Danko Jones podcast starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flynn, I get his Danko Skewer, still love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes tear me in from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down. Nick Flanagan sometimes joins Danko and co-hosts the podcast, and it's a real treat listening to Nick and Danko banter back and forth. I'm a huge fan of Nick's old punk bands, the Brutal Knights and Teen Crud Combo, and I've seen his stand-up comedy several times as well, and he is really funny.
The googly gaggly goblins will make sure they get their podcast fill by listening to Danko Jones, then snacking on some broken bones. And scaredy cats will run amok when rock and roll starts to talk. flapping gums, and striking tongues, a chilly podcast has now begun.
So we've got Scott Middleton from the Cancerbacks returning to the podcast. Welcome back, Scott. It's nice to have you back.
Thanks, guys. Yes. Good to see you.
Good to see you. It's been, almost 2 years?
Yeah, it's been about 2 years, exactly, wow. Yeah.
That's crazy. But, you know, the last time you were here, I remember we talked once we turned off the mics and you started everything, all this crazy stuff started rolling out of your mouth. I'm like, why weren't we fucking talking about this?
We got to follow around each other for a week and get all the good stuff, right? Yeah.
So there's a lot to talk to you about.
Yeah, sure.
First off, when we finished the last podcast episode, you told me a story about how you and Liam presented Black Sabbath with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Kerrang Awards.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this a true story?
It is. It was funny. It was actually the whole band. It wasn't just us two.
Oh, it was.
It was funny. It was one of those things where, like, we were in town, but we were touring, you know, like, off-record cycle sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Maybe it was around festival season or something. And so we weren't, like, nominated for an award. Whatever. No big deal. But we were like, oh, maybe we'd go hang out, you know, whatever. And then, anyways, we kind of just heard from Kerrang and they were like, hey guys, it's totally cool if you come, but you can come only on one condition, that your band presents an award to Black Sabbath. And we were just like, no, we don't want to do that at all.
Sounds like a very British type of humor.
They totally set us up because we had just been doing, like, we have this side, you know, cover band called Bat Sabbath that, you know, we just kind of sprung up out of nowhere, out of a sort of a joke. And anyways, but it ended up sort of taking on a life of its own. We recorded a couple covers and we did a little bit of touring with it for fun because people wanted to hear it. And it was a great time. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, I guess they thought it was fitting since we had a Sabbath cover band that we should do this with Sabbath. And, you know, we didn't really know what was going into this whole thing. They were just like, show up. You know, we figured we were going to, like, you know, open the card and read, hey, this year's award goes to... Well, it was basically like we walked up on stage. Like, they called us out. Like, it was like Scott Ian and Corey Taylor, I think. Like, they announced, they introduced us. And they were like, okay, this is Cancerbats. I got this Sabbath cover band, which is, you know...
That's cool enough.
Cool enough anyway. Like, you know, huge Anthrax fan. I was like, this is awesome. We walk up on the stage in front of, like, a whole room of, you know, A-list metal celebrities or whatever.
Right.
And basically, Kerrang's editor is like, okay, so yeah, these guys, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, and then he just basically gives Liam the mic and he's like, here you go.
Talk
about Sabbath. And Liam's just like, what? It was pretty funny because, like, there wasn't anything about, like, hey, prepare something to say.
They never said that to you.
No, they had this, like, little video montage, which was cool. We were all, like, watching. And then Liam's like, okay, yeah, I mean, this is the reason we're all here. None of us would have jobs, you know, if it wasn't for this band.
Right.
You know, but whatever, he was able to, you know, all the credit to him, like, fake his way through this speech and tribute to Sabbath.
Wow. Is it online?
It might be somewhere.
I thought you would have, like, you know, a monitor with a completely long intro given to you, you know.
No. It was, like, completely off the cuff, and he was just like, okay, here's a go. And then, like, literally we're staring at Sabbath and Sharon, and, you know, they're all sitting there just kind of like,
wow.
Yeah. And then they came up on stage, you know, and, like, we passed them this trophy.
Did you say that on stage?
I mean, you know, we just, you know, they said a few things, thank yous. And then the cool part was is that we got ushered off the stage and then into, like, the photo room.
Mm-hmm.
So we got put in, like, the perfect position to have... You know, we didn't have to be those guys to be like, hey, can we get a photo?
Yeah. Right.
Literally, the photographer's like, let's get a photo, guys. And we're like,
professional.
Yes, this is the best.
So you got to get the photographer's email. That's in those situations, well, I always go.
Luckily, he was our friend.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
wow, it totally worked out, and we were able to get it. And our manager happened to be in the background snapping with his phone as well.
That's good.
But it was cool because they stayed and hung out and talked to us. And
who was that? Which part of they?
It was basically, it was the band except for Bill.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, so Ozzy, Geezer, Tony.
Ozzy, too?
Yeah. All three of them were there. Because they were...
Did one of them die? Because
I think it was basically... No.
Oh, what are you doing, man? Good,
I mean, Dio died. He was Dio in Sabbath. Yes, this is the Ozzy line. Yeah. But I guess this was right when they started doing the reunion. So they were, I think, like headlining Download. I think it was the weekend of Download where they were like the headliner.
This is before the album came out, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Just before that. And so like... They were super cool to us, especially Tony and Geezer. Like, just straight up the nicest guys. Mm. And, like, I mean, here we are just grinning our asses off, you know, and hanging out with Sabbath. Even, you know, 5 minutes, it was the best, you know, like, holy shit, this is career highlight, you know, whatever. This is our lifetime achievement.
Right.
You know? Oh, like, yeah. So, yeah, but it was seriously, they were super cool, really nice, you know. Like, Ozzy was a little less chatty, but he shook his hand, or shook all our hands, you know, said, hey, guys, yeah, whatever, you know.
He's been through a lot.
Yeah, he has been. He has been. And it's funny contrasting him, and then you look at Tony, who's, like, been going through, like, cancer and chemo and all that, and he looked amazing. And and man, it was just like, it was super cool. Like,
but I think Ozzy's one of those guys you just never hear about the horrible health things that are probably you know what I mean?
It's like, possible. Well,
he seems like he's just put himself through so much. And
but then I saw them when they came to Hamilton, like last year, like last April, I guess. And Ozzy was like amazing.
Yeah.
Like, he was doing like push-ups on stage.
How was his voice?
Great, actually.
We played with Ozzy in Paris. It was at the I'm forgetting the venue, but it was us, then Korn, then Ozzy. It was his show.
Yeah.
And backstage, I had long given up any hope to like meet him. But I did run into him in the hallways, and he was crouched over. You would think he was, you know, not all that together. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, of course, when the showtime came,
he just comes alive.
But destroyed. He's like George Jones or killed something, him. Right? Well, like, he's like, he's a split, he's almost a split personality.
That was the thing, like, seeing him at the award show, it was like he was kind of hobbling around a little bit.
Yeah, hobbling
like,
a bit.
Had this little, like, sort of, you know, gremlin thing about
him.
Yeah,
that's exactly how he
looked. Then I watched him live, and he's jumping up and down, and he's like, all this energy. But then I saw some documentary, and it looked like he was doing like pre-show workouts and stuff like that, and really getting into shape for it, because he's got to do it to pull it off.
I remember I saw Deep Purple like 8 years ago or something, maybe longer. And the singer, I can't remember who the singer, they've gone through a few different singers, right?
Yeah.
Like Deep Purple. The singer was...
Coverdale years. Or
it wasn't Coverdale. And it wasn't...
Ian Gillan.
I guess it was Ian Gillan.
He's back in the band for years.
Yeah, it was Gillan. And he just looked like a karate master. You know?
Really? Oh, my God. Yeah. Ian Gillan has aged incredibly well.
Well, he just stays in... It's like the Sting thing, you know? It's like you got this weird core deal, you know?
He just looks amazing. Ian Gillan looks amazing. He sounds amazing. That's and from what I've heard... Yeah. Is a gentleman off stage.
Well, that was the presentation. That was definitely, in fact, it almost was, he was like too gentlemanly
you gotta have huge respect for these guys that can continue on. I mean, like, even that was the thing. We just did a tour with Danzig.
Yeah.
And he just turned 60 before the tour.
Yeah.
And man, that guy rocks the fuck out. He's he's doing jump punches. He's getting his face right in the crowd, giving mics to kids, like headbanging the whole time. Like, I was blown away. Like,
did you watch that Danzig Legacy?
I didn't get to see
special.
I tried to download it, but it didn't work. Yeah, I missed it.
Fucking fantastic.
Was it awesome? Yeah.
So we did Legacy.
He did this whole thing where it was. Based on the Elvis Presley 68 comeback special.
Right.
So they had the whole thing where there, you know, there's a crowd and the guys were performing at this raised stage, just like that when Elvis was wearing the black leather jacket and everything. And then there was like, instead of Elvis in bright red lights, it said Danzig.
Sure.
And he was singing.
Okay, I saw a photo of it, yeah.
Fucking amazing. But look, you did something that... There was back in 2010, we were touring the world with Guns N' Roses.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Whenever, you know, GNR called, we were there. And there was an offer that came through to open up for Danzig for four shows in America.
Oh.
And we had to turn it down because we had these Guns N' Roses dates. And for me, it was what a crazy
situation to be in.
I just never would have ever believed I would be in that situation.
That you would have to say no to the to dancing.
Because of Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
But I remember I almost cried.
Like you were so frustrated about it?
I was so disappointed. We were in our bus and they told me the offer came through, and then we looked at the date and I almost cried. And you did what I've always wanted to do. You not only opened for Danzig, you fucking toured with
him. So who is his band at the moment?
Okay, so he's got Steve Zing on bass and awesome Steve's dude. From Samhain. Yeah, awesome dude. Yeah, that's the thing. His band kills it. He's got Tommy Victor from Prong on guitar. He's been playing with him for 20 years.
I've seen Tommy's so great.
Yeah, he's really perfect in that band.
Dude, and like, I'm a huge Prong fan. Like, I've been listening to them forever. So I geeked out with Tommy. But the cool thing
was that Prong?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Prong. I love that. And like, you know, he's coming up to us being like, hey guys, oh fuck, I love your band. I've got like 3 of your records on my phone right now. You know, like, wow, and we're just like, cool. Okay, mind blown. This is crazy. That's like, a great you're start. The best dude. And he's like, always hanging out, super nice. Dude kills at guitar. Like, I've never seen Danzig play before this tour. For whatever reason, it never worked out for me.
Yeah.
I never got to see Prong either. Man, that guy can play. Like, completely blown away by, like, because that's the thing. It's like, you listen to some Prong stuff, and he doesn't really, like, he holds back. Like, he's, like, writing, like, songs that maybe are a little bit more simple. And it's just, and like, he's sort of focusing on the song rather than showing off as a guitar player.
It's like Helmet-style kind of riff or stuff,
some
right?
Of it, so some it's of it. Like, some of it's thrashier. Some of it's a bit more industrial. Like,
but that's a certain type of thing that doesn't necessarily show off, like, well, what Danzig 1 has, like, with John Christ or whatever. Like, when he would, like, all that solo.
Every song has a solo where, like, he's nailing it. He's killing it. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I would say doing it better.
And well, like, certainly.
Because seriously, man, the way some of the songs like sound live, I was blown away. Like how heavy.
Were they doing Samhain and Misfits?
No, none of that.
Just Danzig.
Well, no. See, here's the thing. Danzig's about to put out a covers album.
Okay.
I think it's called Skeletons or something like that. But basically, they did.
Is this a scoop?
No, I mean, no, this is gonna be he talked tour. About it every night on tour, because they did like 3 or 4 covers in the set. So they did like NIB, like they did a Sabbath cover every night. And they did
they get you guys up there? Hey, let's get the Bat Sabbath dude.
It was kind of funny because like this is how we met Johnny Kelly from Typo Negative,
who's the best dude ever.
Also the best dude, yeah. So he's the drummer for Danzig. And
he's
second
Kill Devil Hill as well.
Yeah, Kill Devil Hill. He's in Seventh Void with Kenny from Typo. Post Typo band. Okay. Yeah, and great guy. And basically, how we met him first was at soundcheck, because we were like, oh yeah, Sabbath. So we were like checking with Sabbath the next day, and he comes up, hey guys, I like that Sabbath you were doing Into the Void there. That's awesome. You know, like, you know, it kind of broke the ice right there. And yeah, I mean, everyone's just big Sabbath fans, basically. Yeah, so they would do an Elvis cover every night.
Which one?
Oh man, I'm trying to remember.
Trouble?
No, a little less conversation.
No. It wasn't. it's bugging me that I can't remember. It wasn't like a super famous one, right, but it was actually pretty cool how they like made it metal. And then they did some other one that was way more obscure that nobody seemed to know, but
because on the Lost Songs of Danzig, that double album, he included some covers, like a Bowie cover, a T-Rex cover.
Yeah. Right. I want to say it was maybe like Everly Brothers or something.
Right.
Weird. Oh, yeah. I don't know. But anyways, he's got a covers album coming out. And then so he would do this sort of segue of like 3 covers in a row. And then, but see, what really impressed me actually was like him playing some of the newer stuff from albums I hadn't really given the time of day.
Yeah.
And those,
like what albums?
Like I Lucifer-y or whatever it's called.
Wicked album.
Circle of Snakes, one of the newer albums, which like I've gone back and listened to some
Wicked
of the
record.
Stuff. Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's like, but
a
when
wicked
you hear
return.
The like, but see, maybe the production on some of it's not the best.
I Lose Safari.
But that one's cool. Circle of Snakes, I think, I don't know, is missing something production wise for me. But I listen to those songs live and I'm like, those are the songs that are in my head every day. Yeah, man. Yeah,
that used to be our pre-show music.
And that was, did you play, like, was the tour long enough and did some of, were some of the venues smaller than other venues? Like, did the places vary in size?
Yeah, there were some really big ones. I think the smallest was like the Commodore in Vancouver.
Okay. Wow, that was the smallest?
That was the smallest one. Holy, a lot of them were big, but I mean, like Pennywise was on the tour too. Right. So they brought a lot of fans. And
how,
like,
is that? You guys opening for Danzig makes sense.
Yeah.
And Pennywise makes sense to me from a Misfits point of view.
Well,
but from a Danzig point of view,
I'll say this. There was definitely like a bit of a split. You know, it's funny because we were sort of joking that like Cancer Bats is the baby that Danzig and Pennywise had together.
Right.
You know, because like I wasn't the biggest Pennywise fan growing up, but all the other guys in my band loved them. They love all that punk stuff.
There was that whole face to face.
Yeah, they grew up on
I
all
just
that.
Somehow died. Like, I was into Bad Religion.
Yeah.
And I was into like a couple of things like that, but when it got to Face to Face and Pennywise and Bless and Jake, I was just like, I'm confused.
You didn't go deeper.
I fell off on the 90s punk. I was more into like 80s.
That's it, is I wound up getting into the early 80s stuff later. And Touch and Go and stuff, in the AMRAP stuff early on enough.
I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like, I knew a bunch of the Pennywise songs. It was awesome, but like, you know, last day of tour, Fletcher came up to me and was like, hey, Scott, you wanna come play Bro Him on guitar? And I was like, dude, that's super cool you're asking me, but my bass player Jay is a massive Pennywise fan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you should really get him to play it because he's going to like freak the fuck out. And he's like, okay. And he's like, okay. He's like, you go ask him and I'll stand behind you and just listen. And I was like, hey, Jay, do you think you could play Bro Him on guitar? And he's like, yeah. And then Fletcher, who's like this towering, he's like 6'7" or something, just comes and he's like, you fucking sure, man? And he's just, Jay's like, yeah. Okay. And then they went and did it. Uh-huh. And then after the show, Fletcher's like, man, that was awesome, but you got to work on your palm muting. Just like busting his balls. It was pretty funny.
That's great.
But Jay
was
like, man, did someone get that on video? Because, man, that was I didn't. I was showering when it happened. But someone did somewhere, I'm sure. But yeah, but like, you know, so it was like this whole thing was like a massive highlight for our band as well. Like, you know, Danzig, one of my favorite bands and such a huge influence on the way I play guitar. You know, it's like in my style, like I do tons of pinch harmonics and people are always like, oh, so Zach Wilde. And I was like, no, it's so Danzig, man. Like, you don't get it. Like, that there's more than one band that does pinch harmonics. Yeah. Like,
although Zach does kind of. He has cornered the market.
Dude, I'm not like knocking that.
At this point in
time. But that's the thing. Go to a Danzig show and you listen to Tommy fucking squeal his ass off all night better than most people. So for me, it's like how tight that band was just like blew my mind. Great set list. And it was cool because Danzig would literally like pull the crowd, be like, what do you want to hear? Now I'm on my enemies, tell them what they did to me. Get the body bags.
Cover them with waxy, stuff them in the back seat. Flew down to Philly to see Sam Hain.
How was it?
It was awesome, but they were having technical problems that night, and I flew down through London May.
He was on your podcast.
Was my way to get backstage. Yeah. So while they were having like tech problems, and I could see Glenn getting really kind of frustrated, and it was no one's fault.
Yeah.
I was just watching, going, wow. I'm not going to get to meet Glenn Danzig tonight because he was getting, I could just see him getting so upset.
Yeah.
I eventually did, and he was great. Did you have a meeting with the man?
I wouldn't say like extensively. Like, I kind of had this joke for like the first like week and a half of tour where like I never met him, but all the other guys
like
did.
And it was,
well, exactly. I was like, Danzig is my Polkaroo.
Right.
And if people don't know who Polkaroo is, you had to grow up in Ontario in the 80s, I guess. But anyways, basically, he was this guy that I kept missing. And all my bandmates would be like, oh my God, Glenn just came and hung out. It was super cool. He high-fived me, asked how everything's going. And I was like, man, why can't I be there? I was like, it's because like they would be like watching the show from like the side stage or something, and I'd be like, I want to go watch it out front where it sounds better because like I'm so super stoked. This is like my first time seeing him. I want it to sound really good.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where I just kept missing it. Eventually, you know, met him, super nice, you know, like, he was always like, hey guys, you know, I hope you're having a great tour, you know, your set was awesome last night, whatever, like, was super cool to us, you know, and then, like, dream, you know, tour. And, well, yeah, but it was, and then, you know, the whole band, not even just him, like, all those other guys being like, watched you guys last night, you killed it, mm-hmm. it was awesome, love your guitar tone, like, you know, like, Tommy saying something like that to me, like, man, that feels amazing, yeah. It's like, yeah. This is the best, like, super... super fun tour, like, the man.
The reason I asked about the venue size was because yeah. I had my friend who played Daniela, who was in Brutal Nights, like, in the first yeah. bassist, right? Mm-hmm. She was, like, the biggest Danzig fan, like, all of this stuff. When I first yeah. met her, she was, like, just the most insane Danzig
fan. She's like Black Aria, favorite album ever.
Yeah, sure. She would definitely... Really? She knows. She, but she would go... You know, I think she went to Lucifuge.
And yeah, then, yeah.
And I think that was in her first email address that I got from her. It was the word Lucifuge.
And I saw that tour.
She had the gloves. She was really into, you know, everything about Danzig. And we wound up going with her and a friend to Pennsylvania to two shows. We were just okay, going to see yeah. the one show, which was in Allentown. And that was just Danzig. You know, so that was in a, you know, secondary market, much smaller venue, like not quite Call the Office size in London, yeah. but just maybe 600 people, 500 yeah. people, like a really small venue to see awesome. Danzig again.
Man.
And that was the one where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And I think that they didn't play Dirty Black Summer, like the next, the Pittsburgh show. They only played it at the Allentown show. And I was like, cool. And
well, that's what they did with us. They mixed up the set like uh-huh. a little bit every night, which yeah. made it super interesting.
That's really neat. And it just was like, but that was also the show where the bus was just pulled up and he was clearly watching wrestling or something. You could see the
he loves wrestling.
And really? And he was taking photos with people and was much more relaxed because, you know, you're only going to have a lineup of like probably 10, 15 people for a show in Allentown or whatever, yeah, yeah. you know? So, yeah, that was the show. I remember I've seen him three times, and that was the one where it was like, it just felt great. There's something so great about seeing a band, like, in a... Like a fat band in a little shirt, you know what I mean? In a little yeah. suit. Like they're just yeah, in the place yeah. that's too small for them because it just feels like it's bursting, you know?
I
like,
wish some of the venues maybe on the tour were like that because
yeah.
they're like some of them huge. Some of them were like 3,000
and they're all full.
Well, yeah. some of them maybe not as much as they should have been, but like a lot of them were really packed out and people fucking love it.
Yeah. yeah,
they go so nuts for it, and love like, it. And that's the thing, like hearing the whole crowd scream "Am I Demon?"
Right,
really? You know, like, so
when does
good.
That happen?
Yeah, yeah, it's the best.
Oh. Well, it's you know, he's also one of the most evergreen, like modern rock people. I think where it's like it just he wouldn't even necessarily need to tour to kind of have his fans regenerate, if that makes yeah. sense, you know? Like,
oh, definitely.
Misfits is its own thing, you know? Like, Misfits just kind of, like,
totally.
Did its own thing, and the dregs, like, the band without Danzig, like, it's rare that you could have a situation where that can
well, but think about, like, I mean, his situation, he could play in, like, Danzig or the Misfits, and he could play a full set of either of those band's songs, and absolutely. You're not, like, feeling like something's lacking.
No.
And here's another Danzig connection that funnily enough, you guys ended up going out with Danzig. I don't know if you know where I'm leading, but I was talking to Cam Pipes
mm-hmm.
and Shane from 3 Inches.
Yeah.
And they have a cover band, a Rush cover band, called Xanadudes.
Yeah.
And you guys have Bad Sabbath. And whenever you guys want to do it, we will get into our rehearsal space and become Glenn Danko.
That's amazing.
That's our cover band. I love it.
Man, if the three of, I want to do it just to see it.
Yeah, three of our bands. Shane's into it. I think Cam's into it. If the three of our bands...
I love those dudes. They're the best.
Yeah, yeah. Could somehow be in the same venue together once. We will open for it. You guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Bat Sabbath are way more established. You guys have to be the headliners. And then Xanadu.
Well, I think Sabbath are all. They only headline.
Yeah, they can only. You guys headline.
Maybe
you
like
gotta, you got to open with Twist of Cain, man. That's what he does half the
or
time.
Or like
right?
Snakes of Christ or something. Something
that's
really.
Too, That's too hard to sing and play.
Yeah. What about opening with How the Gods Kill? Extend the mix.
No, I don't know.
Or Heart of the Devil.
That, see, I want to do that. I want to do that somewhere in the set.
I wish he did that.
Can I tell you a story? Yeah. I've never told anybody on record, and I don't think anybody knows this, but long time ago, obviously, when Jeff Healey had his club.
Yeah, yeah.
Healey's.
Bathurst and Queen.
Healey's, yeah.
Jeff kept asking me to play at his club. And eventually I said, okay, I'll do it. So the week that I said I can do it, Jeff had a gig in Brazil. So I never got to play with Jeff Healey. But
he was going to play with you?
Yeah. Like, there was a night, every night.
Okay,
every
Thursday, like an industry-ish kind of night where...
He would sit in with the band, definitely.
That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, so he asked me to come down for one of those nights. I said, yeah, okay, I will. So it just so happened he had this gig. So then I made a big stink about it on stage that night, going, you know, Jeff was supposed to be here. He heard about it, and then he called me up, and he goes, okay, you come back. I will definitely be on stage with you. And then I said, okay, I want to do every Danzig ballad there is. Would you do that? And he said, I would. And Heart of the Devil was one of them.
That's
and,
awesome.
And, you know, all the standards think. I never did it. And it's one of my biggest regrets ever in
did he pass music. Away?
Jeff Healey?
Yeah. Because you couldn't do it? Not because, but before you could do it?
No.
Like, what happened? Why couldn't you do it?
My touring schedule was crazy.
That would have been ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, because basically, you know, Jeff is Jeff.
That's amazing.
Jeff is Jeff. But the guy in his house band, I can't remember his name. When I went to see Jeff sit in with the band, I was like, you're watching Jeff, obviously. But then his guitar player for the house, fucking unreal. I wish I remembered his name. But I knew that he could nail any Danzig song I throw at him.
For anybody who's not from Toronto, check out Jeff Healey, because that guy was amazing. Like, I saw that guy play once by accident, and I didn't even know. Like, when I was in high school, it was like, you know, it's one of those things where your buddies are like, hey, let's go downtown. Like, we'll try and sneak into a bar. And
like, he was like the last of that, like, 70s, 60s, 70s, like, go on Yonge Street and see some blues guys playing.
And that was the thing. Like, solid it was, band. Like, something, like, in the 90s when, like, swing music was making its revival or something.
Okay.
And some friends of mine were like, we're going to go see some, like, swing jazz bands. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And, like, we snuck into, like, Gypsy Co-op or like
Pooch or whatever,
Ted's Wrecking Yard, somewhere on Queen over there, like one of those places. And like, we went upstairs, and sure enough, there's all these people like dressed like it's like 1930, and they're like, you know,
you can really picture Toronto getting into the swing dance.
And we're like, okay, this is really weird, like a bunch of like metal teenagers kind of in this bar, whatever. Anyways, whatever. So like, we're hanging out.
Beautiful
and
babies everywhere. Yeah. Everyone's money.
Yeah, I'm trying to buy a Shirley Temple without getting ID'd. And, basically, but then I start hearing this playing, and I like walk up, and it's like Jeff Healey is just like killing this swing music on his guitar. Like, he, you know, and he does that thing, like, because, like, for people who don't know, he was blind, and he would play like, you know, like his guitar, like it was a lap steel almost.
If you
like
haven't
on top,
seen Roadhouse,
like on his
that's
lap.
The best
showcase
of Jeff Healey.
He played rock and roll.
He blew me away, man. Yeah. It just blew me away. But like, he was
but he also played trumpet too. Yeah. People don't know he was like a rock. He played rock and roll for a living, but his real love was jazz.
Jazz, because he was like a huge like 78 collector and everything, right?
Humongous 78 collection.
Yeah,
my friend Roger, who owned Monster Records on Yonge Street, when he opened his store. I guess as a gift, I don't really know, but Healey gave him his 78 collection to sell, or at least part of it.
That's so cool.
It's amazing.
How long have you known all the guys at Cancer Bats?
I met them probably about, like, I met Liam probably about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Just like going to shows. It was just like, that was the thing, because like, there was some people in my high school that like were into similar music. And then like, once I kind of just got introduced to that world, it was sort of like I didn't even care if I knew anybody going to shows. Mm-hmm. I just was about seeing these bands play.
Right.
And I was just like, okay, well, this is my calling. It's like, okay, there's this whole local scene of punk and hardcore and metal, and I'm like, I'm just going to go to everything I can. And it didn't matter to me sometimes if I had a friend to go with or not, because
eventually I just made
friends with the local bands. I met people who were just like, hey, we're always at these shows too. And that was one of the things, like I met Liam going to a Raised Fist show, at the cathedral, just randomly. I don't know. I was just like, oh, okay, they're playing. I just happened to be walking by and I was like, oh, I guess I'll go check it out. It was like an afternoon show. And like, I'm standing there and he's just like, hey man, you playing that like really crazy metal band? Yeah, you guys are awesome. Like, you know, whatever. Just like, and became friends, because all of a sudden I was like, I saw him at all these shows. And then eventually over the years, it was just like, hey, like, let's form a band. We like so much of the same music and like, we get along great. Like, let's jam. And he's like, well, I'm in Montreal. And I was like, well, that's cool, because, you know, I work for Via Rail selling train tickets, so I can go there for free. Let's have band practice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I used to do. I used to sell train tickets.
Wow.
And
would you get the sandwiches for free with the beverage?
Yeah, I could get first class. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. But, I would go to Montreal and have band practice. Like, I would travel 6 hours. And then eventually we got guys from Toronto to be in our band. So then it was like, okay. Liam had to. Well, yeah, it was sort of one of those things where, like, we did our first tour and his girlfriend was like, nope, see you later. Just like,
whoa.
Broke up with him, like, right away.
Yeah.
And, he was just like, okay, well, yeah, I have no reason to be in Montreal anymore, so I'm going to move to Toronto. So it ended up working out great.
I'm saying, it's a favor. It's like, imagine she just strung him along and just been like, I can kind of deal with this, you know?
Maybe the stress of like him commuting would have made him, you know, fall out.
So you're on your, what is it, fifth album now?
Fifth album, yeah, it's crazy.
Holy
man, it goes by fast.
And it's great.
Thanks, man.
And, we were in the studio making our record, and you were in the studio making your record, right?
Around the same time, yeah.
We were chatting on the old social media about it.
Yeah, you guys did your record with Rats?
With Rats, and I tell in so many interviews, I name drop you.
Oh,
because cool. The last time you came down here, you brought over the Cancer Bats, the last record that Rats produced.
Oh, Dead Set on Living, yeah.
Right, Dead Set on Living.
Yeah.
And I listened to your guitar tones, which is something that I've always felt we achieved 85% to 90% of
like
what was in my head
to be with it. Yeah.
And here they were, and we knew Eric, and we had this history with Eric, and here he is producing the sounds that were in my head, which were in your guitar tones.
Oh, cool.
Oh, of course it's the fingers, the hand, the owner of the hands and the guitar, but you know, here was Eric doing this heavy band, and then doing other things too. So your visit to the podcast was the catalyst for Fire Music and Eric.
That's awesome, man.
Coming back into our lives.
Yeah, man. So, you know, it's funny. It's funny how that is. It's like, you know, just things come full circle. Like, you know, because when we started working with like Rats and sort of back in the day Gavin Brown, one of the things they were like, oh yeah, we worked with Danko Jones, and we're like, well, that's fucking cool. Yeah, there's a band we can get behind. That
we were the heavy band that you
kind of like, where they, because they were sort of like those guys in the beginning when we did our first record. Like Gavin and Rats had worked with like Billy Talent, and then, you know, Gavin's like, oh yeah, I used to play drums in Danko Jones, and like kind of did that. And they were saying like, you know, we did like Big Sugar, and I was like, yeah, but they did Danko, so that's fucking awesome.
That's nice.
You know, I could make records with that guy for the rest of my life. I just, you know, and that was the thing, like we had such a strong connection, like because when Gavin produced our first record, and Eric was like, you know,
the engineer.
But we had such a bond with him that we're like, let's just keep working with him. And this guy Kenny was Kenny working with you guys a little bit?
He came down for 1 or 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. Like for us, like on our new record, we ended up working with Ross Robinson.
Yes.
Yeah. And so like, you know, and we wanted to do something different. You know,
absolutely,
we even had talked with Rats, and he's like, guys, you know, like I totally understand. You guys need to like change something up and like just throw something else in the mix. Because he's like, I'll do your record if you want, but if you find someone else, like, there's no hard feelings. We're still best buds. And, you know, that, like, made us feel good because we finally had the opportunity to be able to like go and work with whoever we wanted.
Right.
I wonder, like, I wish I could sit there and compare, like, you know, like have a side-by-side comparison of a set where it went good and went bad and try and see which one is actually better. Is the really pissed yeah. off, like, we're playing harder and faster? You know, it's like... Like when we made our new record, like Ross Robinson, that was like kind of the space he was always trying to like push us into. Would be like, because I've heard that about him. Well, the way he records is like, you go to Ross Robinson, and it's like you're trying to, you go into his studio, and if you're like standing there, and he sees like you're being stiff in any way about like the way you're approaching your instrument, he'll fucking hit you. Like, he'll throw stuff.
I heard
at
that
you.
About you. I was gonna ask.
Yeah,
you about that.
I mean, it's super cool because. It, you know, at first you're like, what the fuck? Like, why are you doing, why are you fucking with me? Like, you'd be playing a part, and then he would literally, like, take a pen while I'm playing, and he would, like, stick it in between my guitar strings to make me fuck up. And I'm like, what are you doing? But what I eventually realized is it's like, he's just trying to get you more on fire. And he's like, all of a sudden, like, you feel this, like, this thing, because it's like, he'll just jab at you. But it makes you want to play, like really come out of your skin and play. Sure. Like, and it took me like a little while to get used to it because I was just like, what's this guy doing? Like, I mean, I always heard those stories, yeah. you know. But I was like, is he like mad at me? And it's like he's doing it because he's stoked and he just like wants. He always talks about like getting the fire out of people, and like, and he's so like, okay, like we would record drums, and. He before we would do the take, he would sit us in the room, and we'd be in this tiny room together with Mikey, like everybody's in there with him, and we're all recording at the same time basically. And he would go and he'd be like, "Okay, Liam, what's the song about?" And Liam would be like, "Well, it's, you know, it's kind of about this." He'd be like, "No, not kind of. What's it exactly about?" Like, and really prod him for meaning.
I hate
behind.
That when people go, "What do you mean, kinda?"
Well, it's like, well, I just well, yeah, say it.
But he has a purpose about it because his whole thing word. Is that he's like, and he would get us all. Once we got this like idea about what the song was about, he would go to each one of us and ask us individually what this meant to us and how we relate to those lyrics.
Yeah,
because his whole thing is like everybody needs to be like singing the song with their instrument, whether they're singing or not, because right. it has to be to that like that. Purpose, and it's like
that's intense, but it's
yeah.
good.
He calls it like he's kind of like this like woo woo sort of like spiritual kind of guy, and he's unlike anyone I've ever met, and he's amazing. We got along with him great, but he like took us to all these like really dark places sometimes, and his whole thing was just like, you know, if you're playing a song for a kid who gets beat up by his dad every day, like he's not gonna want to listen to you. Play it safe. Like you've got to like play your ass off for this kid who's having the worst day of his life, and he's got to feel that, you know, that urgency from what you do. And like, and yeah, like we would get to some like really dark places, you know, and open up about a lot of that stuff. And it was like it really like pushed us in directions like we hadn't gone before. And like it was cool. It was really weird like hearing the songs back versus the demos we made, because everything was like twice as fast. Mm-hmm. Because he was like, play it harder, go crazier. And we're like, literally, while Mike's, you know, smashing his drums, we're like jumping around the room, like banging our guitars, like it's this basement punk show. Like that's his whole thing, like really rip all the time. Like,
I can see how you can.
I mean, it was hard, like, and it's not for everybody, like, that's the thing. Mm-hmm.
But you gotta go in with a team mind. Spirit.
Yeah, well, because our thing was, yeah. like, okay, we want to do something different, we want someone to push us.
Well, I'm admiring your...
Willingness to
jump in the fire.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone.
No, it's not. And that's
would
the thing,
be in
like,
that group.
Maybe you wouldn't be, but maybe then you'd surprise yourself too at the same time. Like, I would.
Most of the times,
I would love to hear him do this approach on so many different people just to see what it would be like.
Right. Miles Davis. Know? R.I.P.
Yeah,
Miles Davis.
Exactly. Okay, that was the best I could do.
What would Carly Rae Jepsen sound like? Yeah,
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah,
Doctor no, the Medics.
I mean, that's the thing. It's difficult, and that is the thing. Like he would push like. He would push Liam like vocally and be like, "Okay, man, you can scream really well. Like,
but
man,
that's you, who you need can to push the most."
He's like, "You can scream all day vocalist. And you won't lose your voice." And Liam would be like, "Thanks." He's like, "No, I want you to lose your voice." you need to like give it because he's like, if you're gonna scream at somebody, you're singing a song about somebody you want to kill. You're not gonna go meh 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 meh.
So did he lose his voice?
Yeah, eventually. But like. But he got him to sing in a different way and like sing louder and sing with more force and intent. And like, you know, at first it didn't really like sound good. Mm-hmm. We were sort of like, I don't know. Like, where's he going? But he like then really spent the time and like really got him. Cause he was like, his first thing would be like, okay, get that emotion, get the power out and then make it you and then make it sound like, you know, as good as it can. Yeah. But, you know, don't be scared. And that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to sing really angry about something, like, make it frightening. Make it, like real. Don't make it just like, hey, I'm going to sing this and nail the part. It's like, you got to have purpose behind what you're doing. That's his whole thing. It's like, everything's got meaning and purpose and intent. And eventually it all, like, you know, it comes together and you hear this, like, really... live sounding thing, you know, like we didn't play to a click track. He would like set up when we would do drums. What he would do is he would put like a delay on the vocals and maybe a little bit on like the snare drum, and the repeats of the delay would then clue in Mikey like to play on time with it. So it would just like you're always kind of like your own metronome. So if you speed up, you're still speeding up like consistently with yourself, and you're like kind of in that pocket. Yeah. Wow. It was so different. Like that's technically wild. And it was cool. Like we recorded like to 2-inch tape, and it was like we'd never done that before. And we're like, this is super cool. And then he'd put it into Pro Tools and like, you know, edit it down and everything. But we never had that chance to do anything like that before. So it was super cool. And he, you know, going in, and he's got this like crazy microphone that like Nick Cave recorded a bunch of records on, that he like, I guess basically everything he's recorded since like the first Limp Bizkit record or something like that was made on this mic. And so like I showed up with like a bunch of gear, and he'd be like, yeah, like, and I'd be like, well, you know, should we like mic up my cab? And he was like, or we could use like the cab that I recorded like Sepultura's Roots with. And I was like, why don't we try that one? And it sounded awesome, you know. But it was cool. Like, you know, we used like a bunch of our own gear. He had other ideas like to mix in, and it was,
where was the studio?
It's in Venice Beach. It's like literally on the beach. That's like, nice. It's like you open the back door and it's sand.
Wow.
Yeah, it's it was awesome. So there's all kinds of like crazy people dropping in here and there and
performing in front of recording in front of a carnival.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. But really, like, it was, there would be people, like, walking by and poking, because there's this door that's not, like, all the way to the ceiling. It's sort of open and letting air in all the time. People would hear music and sort of, like, poke their heads in and kind of, like, walk in. Hey, what's going on in here? And you'd be like, hey, yeah, we're making a record. See ya. Yeah. It was kind of funny. But that was the thing. It's, like, it's all just, like, in the basement of his house. He has this really cool setup, and he's just the most instantly like creative guy I've ever met too, where he'll just be like, okay, I kind of had this idea. Why don't we try, you know, I've got this like Fender 6-string bass from 1963. Let's bust that out. And like, what if Scott, what if you play like a high melody at the same time, and then we get Jay, like who's our bass player, like to play something on the low strings at the same time. And then we put it through a weird, like, octave pedal and see what comes out, you know. And it's like you're trying all these like wacky things that are,
that I'm all up for that stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'm not against
no
that
no
stuff.
Exactly. But it would come out really cool. Or you'd be like, okay this part needs an extra little guitar melody on top, and he's like, I want you to think about this and this song. And he's like, you know, he would get me, he'd be like, close your eyes and think about this part. And he's like, and start thinking about a melody in your head. He's like, don't hum it out loud. Just think of it in your head. Come up with something. And I'd be like, okay. And I'm like, start kind of doing a thing. And he's like, and then he would give me a guitar and be like, now play it. and then press record. And it worked. That was the thing. Like, I came up with something super cool, and I was like,
I mean, I understand that process as well.
You know what I mean?
There's been a few times doing fire music. Eric, I came into the studio, and he's like, yeah, so we're going to lay down that solo today? And I go, what solo? And then we got to do the solo in the song. And then I just did it on the spot. He goes, you just came up with that? I'm like, yeah. I just shat that out. You want another one? But we used the first thing I came up with.
Something
so I understand but that process.
Which is awesome. Sure. Yeah, yeah,
man. DVD of a movie.
By the way, I love fire music. I think it's awesome.
Oh, thanks, because I had a copy if you wanted it. If you didn't have it.
Well, because now we're on the same record label in Canada.
You grab
New Damage. Yeah,
I have your album as well. We're label mates. We're on New Damage.
That's great. Yeah.
Which is
we made it happen.
Yeah,
I got to get my comedy record. Maybe I'll contact New Damage.
Yeah.
Then we can all tour together and be in a band at the same time. Stay in the same van down by the river.
Yeah, you'll open for us?
I'm closing. Because once the band has got everyone rocking, everyone will be in a relaxed mood to sit down after they've danced. Like, the worst thing in the world would be comedy after, like...
We've had Nick open for us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, parts of it were awesome. You guys were very nice to me.
We were awesome to you.
Was the crowd nice to you?
No, we were awesome to him.
The crowd was okay. The post crowd.
Yeah, because how does a rock crowd deal with comedy? Like,
probably.
Yeah.
But this is before the podcast. Maybe now
people might be more familiar with Nick.
Yeah.
And I was more also in the more like really kind of more my noise rock period. Like abrasive, like more abrasive maybe at that time. I don't know.
But Scott, thanks for coming down.
Dude, thank you for having me. This is always the best.
Always thank a pleasure.
You. You're welcome.
Oh, wait. I'm getting in shit for always saying and making noise at the end, so.
No, now it's you not guys shit. Have to say. It's just an observation.
He made a really cute smile when he made that noise, in case anyone's wondering.
Nick always has to be the last voice on the podcast. So take it away, Nick.
Thanks, guys.